Welcome to the Space Coast February 2011 meeting. It is also our annual meeting, and it is also time for elections. Okay, so to kick this off and get it started, can we all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Just so that, is there anybody here that has not cast a ballot or would like to cast a ballot for the election? If so, go out to the table, the sign-in table, and pick up a ballot and fill it out. We do have a quorum already via proxy for the meeting. We have a total of 128 proxies, which gives us 46.3%. Okay. We need two volunteers, Jackie and Beverly, if you'd be so kind, to count the ballots. Just see Clay, please, and give me the results afterwards. I'm sorry? No. Not today. We have, there'll be no new membership report today or financial statement. We had a database glitch that started Thursday, and they're working on it feverishly, so unfortunately we can't pull all the information. So we'll have it for you at the next meeting. The next President's Forum meeting will be March 12th. And for all the goodies that everybody's enjoying, that's coming from Shutter Outlet. Just as a note, you will probably want to stay a little while after the presentation today because there'll be a drawing, and fill out the tickets. They're giving away a bunch of little goodies at the end. So I think that's very, very nice of Shutter Outlet to do that. And you can pick them cards up at the table if you haven't already done it. And the program today is what to expect if you have to go to trial. And we're very, very fortunate to have the distinguished law firm of Taylor and Carls, PA, doing this presentation for us today. And I think everybody's going to learn something and have a lot of fun in the process. Okay, the main speaker will be Mr. Harry Carls. He is the founding partner of Taylor and Carls. And he's also bringing in with him a number of other members of the firm, which Harry will be so nice to introduce. Harry Carls received his BA degree in government from American University School of Government and Public Administration in 1969 and his JD from George Washington University School of Law in 1972. He's become a member of the Florida Bar in 1972 and was admitted to the U.S. District Court for the Middle District of Florida. He's also certified circuit court mediator and insurance mediator. Good man to know. In February 81, he and his partners formed the firm of Taylor and Carls. Since that time, Mr. Carls has concentrated his practice in the area of community association law. The whole meeting here today will be recorded and available on DVD. The cost of the DVD would be $20. And you can send me an email, rk-scca@cfl.rr.com, if you already didn't know it. And we'll take it from there. Thank you. I'd like to introduce Mr. Harry Carls.
My mother wrote that, by the way. start singing then. That would be bad. Well, good morning and welcome. We're going to, I see some familiar faces out there. And the purpose of our mock trial today is twofold. One is to try and show you what actually happens, sort of. There'll be a little more humor than in a normal courtroom during a trial. And many of you, either as directors or property managers, at some point in time, either because you're called as a witness or because you have to produce evidence for a trial, you kind of know that a trial's out there, you've seen trials on television, but you're not really familiar with the procedures that go on. What we're going to try and do with this mock trial is show you in a shortened snapshot, so you're not here for 10 hours, those procedures, and throw in a dash of humor. Now, this, of course, is a hat. And when you see me wearing this hat, I will be the narrator for the mock trial, which means I will be kind of like the stage manager. What was that old play we all read in high school? Thank you. I should have paid more attention in high school, yeah. I will be kind of like the stage manager. I'm calling it the narrator for copyright reasons. I will give you a little flavor for what's going on and why the attorneys did what they did. I hope this fits. Now, without any further ado, and I know you've already welcomed me, I'd like you to give a big round of applause to the Taylor and Carls Too Good for Broadway players. Here they are, Too Good for Broadway. Come on down. Now, our players this morning, actually, Mr. Paul Hinckley will be playing the association attorney, Mr. Noble Guy. And defense attorney defending the delinquent unit owner will be one of our partners, Patrick Howe, playing C. Meter Roll. His client, the unit owner, Tammy Hall, will be playing Ms. Lucy Leach. Lucy Leach, the delinquent owner. And our stalwart board president, played by one of our attorneys, Sarah Wilson, playing I'm a lean. Thank you. And playing Judge Mental will be yours truly.
It is extraordinarily crowded with bank foreclosures, but I've given the two parties some of my valuable time from my calendar to try this case, and I understand that we have a, I know the two attorneys submitted, you do?
Okay. The two attorneys submitted a stipulated statement of facts, and I will read that into the court record at this time. I understand this case is about sinking value condominium, a 20-year-old structure located in scenic Brevard County. In its early days, it was a much desired property sold out within 18 months of its initial offering, enjoys a good rental market, attracted good tenants. But with the passage of time, it became evident that the building's original construction was poorly done. Unfortunately, none of the early boards saw fit to investigate these defects, and both the statute of limitations for construction defects and the statute of repose have long since expired. In addition, with the bursting of the real estate bubble, the association, already faced with mounting building repair costs, was now upside down on all of its units. The association has attempted, I understand, to collect the ever-increasing delinquent assessments, and has generally been successful, mainly because the rental market is still viable, and most unit owners want to preserve their ownership and the flow of the rental money. An exception to this is one Mrs. Lucy Leach, an absentee owner who has a renter in the unit, but her personality has become more combative with each passing year. Mrs. Leach resents making payments to anyone. The only payments she voluntarily makes are to the water, electric, and cable companies who have threatened to cut off her service if she doesn't. Mrs. Leach doesn't live in the unit, but she makes frequent trips to check on the unit, collect the rent personally, and seek out any directors she can to complain about the terrible condition of the common elements at sinking value. Sinking value, I understand, Council has finally decided to engage Mr. Noble Guy to collect these delinquent assessments. And I understand, Mr. Roll, that you've been engaged to defend Ms. Lucy Leach. And I want to congratulate you on the purchase, recent purchase of your yacht, which I understand is named Sukasa Mikasa. And so that is the background, gentlemen. I appreciate stipulating to that. And so without any further ado, I will turn the proceedings over and ask, is plaintiff's counsel ready?
We are, Your Honor.
And Mr. Roll, the defense?
We are, Your Honor. We do have a motion in limine that's pending right now.
All right. I think I'll entertain a motion in limine as a preliminary matter at this time.
Hello? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Your Honor, the motion in limine that we filed is actually a motion to strike. We had, as you know, come before Your Honor a few months back on some discovery that was outstanding. We had requested some documents from the other side. They were not produced within the time frames that are imposed by the Rules of Civil Procedure. Your Honor then entered an order giving them a certain amount of time to respond, and they were 12 days after, they finally responded 12 days after the deadline imposed in your order. So we're asking that all the exhibits of the plaintiff be stricken because of that that tardiness and defiance of your order.
Well, certainly I'm not pleased with defiance of my order. Mr. Guy, you have a response?
I do, Your Honor. Thank you. We ask that the court deny the motion to strike. The majority of the documents that counsel sought were available in the public record. The rest were attached to the complaint. The defendant has not been prejudiced in any way by receiving them late, so we would ask that the court deny the motion.
Well, and certainly I expect my counsel to adhere to my discovery orders, but in light of the fact that there was no prejudice in the preparation of your defense, I'll deny your motion, counsel. All right. Any other preliminary matters before we begin the actual trial?
We may want to invoke the rule, Your Honor.
All right. And counsel, what's your position on invoking the rule?
Your Honor, I only have one witness today. The witness is here on behalf of the association. She's the corporate representative, and require her to not be here during the trial would be prejudicial to my client, and so we would ask that the rule not be invoked.
Mr. Roll, do you have one or more witnesses?
Just one, Your Honor.
All right. Well, normally I do invoke the rule, but in light of the fact that we have only two witnesses who are both parties, I will not invoke the rule of sequestration. Any other preliminary matters?
No, Your Honor.
All right. Then, with both counsel ready, preliminary matters disposed of, Mr. Guy, you may proceed and present your opening statement.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor,
this case concerns unpaid assessments owed to the Plaintiff Condominium Association. The plaintiff will demonstrate today that the association validly assessed the defendant her share of the common expenses of the condominium. We will show that the defendant failed to pay those assessments. The plaintiff will show that the plaintiff fulfilled all conditions precedent to filing this lawsuit, and that the association is now entitled to foreclose its lien against the defendant's property. And we will also show that the defendant has no legitimate defenses to this lawsuit. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Roll, your opening statement.
Your Honor, we have several defenses that we believe are going to result in a defense verdict this morning. First of all, the association is not maintaining the premises. They're not using the assessments for the correct purpose of making sure that the common elements are in good working order. In fact, they're taking those assessments and using them for an improper purpose, namely to pay the salary of the board president for her duties as president. So we're going to show that, and the evidence is going to show that those payments are being made improperly. Also, the evidence is going to show that the late fees that have been imposed by the association are excessive and illegal per the Condominium Act. And also, finally, that payments that were submitted by Ms. Leach were improperly refused by the association, and that one of the payments that was sent in that was cash actually had the statement that the assessments were paid in full, therefore we have an accord and satisfaction defense. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And Mr. Guy, you may call your first witness.
Thank you, Your Honor. The plaintiff would like to call to the stand Ms. Ima Lean.
Ms. Lean, would you raise your right hand, please? Do you swear the testimony which you are about to give shall be the truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes.
Please be seated.
Thank you.
Would you please state your name for the record?
My name is Ima Lean.
And what is your position, Ms. Lean?
Oh, I'm the board president.
Thank you. And how long have you been the board president of Sinking Value Condominium?
2 years.
And can you tell us what your general duties are as president?
Oh, wow. Oh, there are so many. Well, I run the board meetings, and I oversee the budget committee and oversee all of the officers and what they do. And, well, we don't have a property manager, so I answer calls. I'm basically on call 24 hours a day. People call me at all hours of the night with complaints, noisy neighbors. Sometimes I clean the pool. We have lots of social activities. We have a disco night and painting. And
okay,
is that okay? There
you.
Are many.
Can you tell us what kind of records that the association generates?
Well, we have accounting records and notices that I send out for the meetings, minutes of all of the meetings, rental agreements.
Okay. And the ledgers that you mentioned, do those ledgers, do they show payments made by unit owners towards assessment?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And does everyone have to pay assessments?
Oh, heavens, yes.
Okay. And what establishes a unit owner's obligation to pay assessments?
Well, it says right in the declaration that they have to pay.
Okay. And, Your Honor, I would like to mark this as plaintiff's exhibit number one.
For identification.
That is correct.
Have you shown it to opposing counsel? You would do that, please, sir.
Thank you. Ms. Lee, do you recognize this document?
Oh, yes. I have a copy actually right on my bedside table.
Okay. And does it look substantially the same as the last time you saw it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Your Honor, we would like to admit into evidence the declaration of condominium for Sinking Valley Condominium.
Objection, Mr. Roll?
No objection, Your Honor.
That will be admitted as plaintiff's exhibit number one.
Your Honor, I have a document here I was going to show to Ms. Lean. Counsel for the defendant has stipulated to its introduction into evidence.
Mr. Roll, is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right, we will stipulate into evidence as plaintiff's exhibit number two.
Thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Lean, are you familiar with this document that I'm showing you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and can you tell me what it is?
This is a ledger.
Okay. And do the ledgers that the association generates ever show a delinquency on them?
Yes.
Okay. And was there ever a delinquency on the defendant's record?
Oh, yes.
When did the defendant first become delinquent?
Oh, gosh, back in January of 2009.
Okay. And what did you do as a result of this delinquency?
Well, first, we always send people a friendly reminder letter in case they've just overlooked paying their assessment.
Okay, thank you. And, Your Honor, I have another document here I was going to show to Ms. Lean. Counsel has stipulated to its introduction into evidence.
Roll, is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
We'll admit that under Ms. stipulation Lean. As plaintiff's exhibit number three.
Very good. Thank you, Your Honor. And, Ms. Lee, do you recognize this document?
Yes, I do.
Okay, can you tell the court what it is?
This is a copy of the friendly reminder letter we sent.
Okay. And did you receive any response to your friendly reminder?
No, none at all.
Excuse me, counsel. Ms. Lee, that appears to be a couple hearts on that friendly reminder letter. Is that correct? Am I seeing that correctly? A couple hearts?
Well, yes.
All right. Thank you. Please continue, counsel.
Okay. And there were payments submitted by the defendant, is that correct?
Well, she tried to make two.
Okay, but those payments didn't bring the account current, is that correct?
Oh,
objection, Your Honor. That's leading.
I'll sustain the objection.
Your Honor, I will rephrase the question. Did those payments bring the account current, Ms. Lane?
Oh, not at all.
Okay. And when the balance was not brought current, what did you do next?
Well, as is our practice, we turned it over to your firm to handle all of the legal parts.
Very good. Okay. And, Your Honor, I have another document I was going to show Ms. Lee. Counsel is stipulated into introduction to evidence. This will be plaintiff's exhibit number four.
Counsel?
That's right, Your Honor. I didn't stipulate as to that.
All right. That will be admitted as plaintiff's exhibit four.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Stipulation.
Okay. And, Ms. Lee, do you recognize this document that I've showed you?
Yes.
Okay. And can you tell the court what it is?
It's the lien that your firm filed.
Very good. Okay. And was there any response from the defendant after the claim of lien was filed?
No, we haven't heard a thing.
Okay, thank you. Okay. At this time, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the right to recall the witness for rebuttal.
You may. And Council Cross.
I sure do. Ms. Lean, how long have you known Ms. Leach, my client?
Well, I've lived here a long time, and so has she, so about 10 years, I think.
You don't like her very much, do you?
Well, actually, no one does.
Well, isn't it true that you believe she complains too much and that she is a troublemaker?
Well, she's calling me all the time, complaining, so I guess yes.
In fact, you have instructed that this matter move forward against Ms. Leach while other collection cases have been stalled. Isn't that correct?
Well, but she's the most delinquent.
How many other unit owners are past due in the payment of assessments?
I think about 6 right now.
And how many pending collection cases does Sinking Value Condominium have?
Oh, excuse me, counsel. I'm exterminating you. Please continue.
That's okay, Your Honor. And how many pending collection cases does Sinking Value Condominium currently have filed with the courts?
I believe 2.
So you have 6 past due matters, but only 2 have been filed.
Correct.
Isn't it also true that Sinking Value charges late fees that are illegal?
Objection, Your Honor. Calls for a legal conclusion.
Counsel, response? Any basis for...
Your Honor, I'll withdraw that question. Ms. Lean, you've got a new Cadillac, don't you?
Well, yes.
Leather seats?
Objection, Your Honor. Relevance?
Well, I see your objection, counsel, but I want to see where this is heading. Please continue.
Leather seats?
Well, yes.
It's a nice car, right?
Oh, it's a very nice car.
Isn't it true that you're being paid by the association for your work as an officer?
Yes, it is true.
How much?
Well, I get around, they pay me $50,000, but that's a lot less than I made before I retired as a cruise ship activity director.
So Mrs. Leach's assessments would go to pay your salary?
Well, they would if she would pay.
Well, I'll move on from that line of questioning. Isn't it true that the parking lot is full of potholes?
There are a few.
Why is the parking lot in that condition?
Well, we currently can't afford to fix them.
Why should Ms. Leach pay her assessments when the board fails to do its job and maintain the common elements?
Well, if she would pay, we could fix them. And that is concurrently, actually. The board, the budget committee has determined that if she would pay just her assessments, we could fix the largest pothole that she's always complaining about. And we've actually named that pothole Lucy Leach Pothole.
Ms. Lean, isn't it true that you returned one of Mrs. Leach's payments?
Oh, yes, but that was because it was a partial payment, and we don't accept partial payments.
Isn't it also true that you accepted Mrs. Leach's last payment, which had a notation on the notation line, assessment paid in full?
Yes, we did accept that, but it didn't cover everything. It doesn't cover interest or attorney's fees or late fees.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Guy, Croft, for redirect.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Ms. Lean, counsel noted that you may have had an antagonistic relationship in the past with Ms. Leach. Is that correct?
Well, yes.
Okay. But that's not the reason that we're here today, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And counsel also mentioned that you may not pursue as diligently collections against other owners in the condominium, but the association must be able to exercise reasonable business judgment in deciding which cases to pursue and which ones not to pursue. Isn't that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the association can't afford to litigate against every delinquent owner at one time. Is that correct?
Oh, definitely correct.
Thank you. Thank you. No more questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Henry Croft?
No, Your Honor.
Gentlemen, I know we haven't gotten too far into this, but I believe it would be beneficial for everybody to take a brief recess. So court will be adjourned. Court will be adjourned for a brief recess. Well, good morning again. It's your narrator back. And I wanted to take this opportunity to explain some of the processes that you've just witnessed in this first stage of our trial. The first observation I would like to make is sort of a personal one. Now, I don't know the man personally. And I think you've got to be impressed with his judgmental. I think he seems to be a man of upstanding character, knowledge of the law. That's just my humble opinion. But now, one of the first things you saw were preliminary matters. And most judges will permit preliminary matters, usually dealing with evidence, sometimes length of time, number of witnesses. They'll deal with that before they actually begin the trial because it can slow down the trial and break the flow. In this case, we saw one counsel with a motion in limine. That is a motion to limit the evidence the other side could present at the trial. In this case, it was a motion to strike all the documents that the association wanted to put into evidence. The basis, which happens all the time, was a discovery violation. The allegation that the association and its counsel failed to disclose all the relevant documents upon discovery request, which the rules of civil procedure require you to do in Florida. Florida, like the federal courts, and almost every state, is an open discovery state. That is, there's not supposed to be a trial by surprise or an ambush. Basically, you can see all of the opponent's documents and interview all their witnesses long before a trial occurs. In this case, there was a violation of the discovery rules, but the judge found there was no prejudice to the defense in preparing his case, so he denied the motion. The second thing you saw was I forget what the second objection was. Let me resume my. Let's let Judgmental handle this.
Invoking the rule.
Judgmental indicates that one of the counsel sought to invoke the rule. Now, the rule is what's called the rule of sequestration. You will not find it in any rule of civil procedure or in any law. It is a tradition, procedural tradition, that has been used in courts for, well, I guess common law, Anglo-Saxon courts, for thousands of years. Basically, what it provides is if one side invokes the rule and you have multiple witnesses, the judge will order all the witnesses to leave the courtroom and not hear the proceedings and be called in one at a time to testify. And that's simply so one witness can't listen to all the other witnesses testify and conform their testimony to look like they're in agreement. The second part of the invoking the rule is the judge admonishes the multiple witnesses while they're outside the courtroom. Don't talk to each other about the case. Again, the idea is so they don't get together and conspire to have consistent testimony. The direct and cross-examination you saw is fairly typical. On direct exam, the plaintiff's counsel is not allowed to ask leading questions. But on cross-examination, it's much more open. And the cross-examining attorney can ask a whole series of leading questions. As a matter of fact, most trial attorneys will uncross ask nothing but leading questions because they want to control precisely what's going to come out of that witness. So you'll hear a series of, isn't it true that you did this and this? And you didn't do that, did you now? Those kinds of things. Those are impermissible on direct, very permissible on cross-examination. All right, I think that's probably a summary of where we've gotten to this point. And as a narrator, I'll be back a little bit later. Thank you. All right, that was a very useful recess. I'm all refreshed. And Ms. Lean, I see you've resumed the stand. And counsel, did you complete your cross-examination?
I did, Your Honor.
And your redirect?
I did, Your Honor.
All right, you may call your next witness.
Your Honor, the plaintiff has no further witnesses. The plaintiff rests at this time.
All right, plaintiff rests. Do I hear any motions at the end of the plaintiff's case? All right.
Not for much, Your Honor.
All right. Then, counsel, you may call your first witness and proceed with your defense.
Can I sit down?
Oh, certainly. Absolutely.
The defense calls the lovely Lucy Leach.
All right, let's have order in the court.
We'll need to get the witness sworn, Your Honor.
Excuse me?
We'll need to get the witness sworn.
Oh, you got a little flustered there. Would you raise your right hand, the other right? Yes. Do you swear the testimony you are about to give shall be the truth and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
So help me, help me, help me God.
Committed. Please take a seat. Counsel, you may inquire.
Thank you, Judge. Good morning. Please state your name.
Lucy Leach.
Ms. Leach, where do you live?
I live at 243... I got this. Hold on. I live at 243... Oh, this is really making me nervous.
Ms. Leach, if you'll excuse me for just a minute, would counsel approach the bench? Gentlemen, do we have any competency issues here? I mean, appearance aside...
I think she's just very nervous, Your Honor.
All right, well, we'll see how this plays out.
Okay, again, Ms. Leach, where do you live?
243 Abigail Way in Jacksonville, Florida.
Do you own that home?
Yes, I do.
Besides your home in Jacksonville, do you own any other property?
Yes, I do. I own a condominium in Sinking Value Condominium, unit number 123.
Is this the same unit that you've heard reference to here during these proceedings?
Yes, it is.
Do you visit your unit at Sinking Value Condominium often?
All the time. Got to keep my eye on my tenants.
Where do you park when you arrive at the condominium?
Oh, I have to park clear across the way in the public parking. I almost break my leg every single time trying to get to my unit because of this stupid pothole. I run, I don't know how many heels because, you know, I've stepped in it and broken the heel. It's just awful.
Have you mentioned these potholes to representatives of the condominium?
Over and over and over again. They don't listen to me anymore.
And this condition of the common elements, is this one of the reasons that you are not paying your assessments?
Yes.
Beyond the failure of the condominium to maintain the parking lot, are there other reasons for withholding the payment of your assessments?
Oh, yeah.
What are those reasons?
Well, the salary of the president. I mean, come on. New Cadillac. She's always wearing some fancy new clothes or jewelry. It's just, I just don't understand why they can't fix a freaking pothole, but they can.
I'm going to caution the witness that inappropriate language is not acceptable in the court.
Sorry, Your Honor. I just got a little upset.
Are there other delinquent owners?
Yes.
Is the condominium association pursuing those owners?
No, they're not.
Has the association levied late fees against you?
Every single month I get a late fee, which is completely ridiculous. Man, that late fee is like $50, and it's more than the late fee on my credit card payment.
Have you tried to pay some of the amounts owed?
Yes, I have. Twice.
What happened the first time?
They sent it back. I don't understand. You know, I thought money was good. But apparently not.
What happened the second time you sent in a payment?
Well, I decided I was going to get real slick. And I wrote on their assessments paid in full, and they took it.
They cashed your check?
Yes, they did.
Are there any other reasons that you feel justified in withholding assessments?
No.
How did you find out that the association was paying Ms. Lean for her duties as an officer?
Well, my friend Betty, who her friend Norma Jean, who her friend Mary, told me.
Objection, Your Honor. Hearsay?
Yes, I believe we're up to quadruple here today.
Beyond the statements from other parties, was there any other method that you used to figure out that Ms. Lean was getting paid a salary?
Well, she told me herself when I asked.
Okay. No further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Cross-exam?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Lean, isn't it true that if you had paid your assessments, the association would have the money to repair the parking lot?
They would have had the money if they didn't pay her.
And you've testified that the association doesn't aggressively collect from other owners, but your delinquency is the most egregious in the community. Isn't that true?
I don't think so.
And if your assessments were not being used to pay Ms. Lean for all the services that she performs on behalf of the association, wouldn't those assessments be going to pay the management company that would have to replace her?
But not the amount that they're paying her.
No further questions, Your Honor.
I missed your last comment. Would you repeat your last comment?
If your assessment were not being paid to Ms. Lean for the work that she does on behalf of the association, wouldn't those assessments go to pay a management company to do the job that she's doing now?
Not in the amount that they're paying her.
Any further questions?
No, Your Honor.
Redirect?
No, Your Honor.
And counsel, you may call your next defense witness.
Your Honor, we have no further witnesses.
So am I presuming you're going to rest?
We do rest, Your Honor.
So you may take your seat, Ms. Lee. So, both the counsel having presented their cases and rested, do we have any motions at this time?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
All right. Well, I believe it's time for another brief recess. So, the court will be adjourned for over 2 minutes. Why, folks? And I just want to start this period of commentary.
Microphone.
I just want to start this period of commentary by saying I know perhaps we've observed a little exotic behavior by Judge Mental, but it doesn't alter my personal opinion of him, and I don't think it should alter your opinion of the man either. But in any event, what we saw with the defense was, and the defenses that you have heard are fairly typical in a lien collection case, and many of you have dealt with this. We'll tick some of those off. One is selective enforcement. You're picking on me. Two is you people aren't running this place right. You're misspending the money, or you're not doing the maintenance, or whatever it might be. I made payments. You haven't accounted for them properly, or you misapplied the payments. So these are fairly typical affirmative defenses that you'll hear. The strategy of the two counsel, and again, you saw in the cross-examination the use of almost exclusively leading questions to narrow the scope of what the witness can respond to. On the other hand, you saw the defense counsel outlining the facts that he needs to argue his affirmative defenses. Now, you did not hear him put those facts and connect them to the argument. And that's because all the counsel do with the witness is extract the information they need for the closing argument, and then they connect it when they make their final argument to the court. When you heard both the opening statements, and in a minute you'll hear the closing or final arguments, you will hear both attorneys fairly matter-of-factly go over how they've proven every element of their claim on the association's part and every element of their defense. Had this been a jury trial, and collection cases, lien foreclosures, are not jury trials because they are actions in equity, not actions in law. If it were an action in law, you would have the right to request a jury, but not in an equity action. So they're always in front of a judge. Had this been a jury trial, both counsel would have done a far more elaborate opening statement and closing statement. They would have told a story in the opening statement, not in the sense that they lied, but they would tell a narrative to the jury to catch their interest, to get them not only interested in what's going to unfold, but steer them to a particular perspective of what that story is going to be as it unfolds. So we're up to the closing arguments by counsel, and then the Honorable Judge Mental will render his decision. So let's return to our proceedings. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was yet another good recess, and I refilled my water bottle. At this time, I'd like both counsel to approach the bench to discuss the closing argument. Now, gentlemen, as you know, my docket is extraordinarily crowded, and we're attorneys tend to be overly verbose. How long think you'll need for these closing arguments?
Your Honor, I think I can complete my closing argument in 90 minutes.
90 minutes? How about you, counsel?
About five.
Five? Let's see. And counsel, I believe you contributed to my last campaign, did you not? All right. Well, you can have all the time you want, Mr. Guy. I didn't see your name on my contributor list. Instead of 90 minutes, I'm going to give you two. All right, gentlemen, let's proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The plaintiff has demonstrated today that the association validly assessed the defendant and her property her share of the common expenses of the condominium, that the defendant failed to pay the assessments after numerous demands, that the plaintiff fulfilled all conditions precedent to the filing of this lawsuit, so that they are now entitled to foreclose their lien against the property. The defendant has failed to establish any legitimate defenses to the action. The association cannot be expected to litigate against every delinquent owner, so the defendant's selective enforcement argument fails. And if the defendant had paid the assessments that were owed, the association would be able to repair the parking lot. And so the failure to maintain the common elements is not a legitimate defense either. So we believe that no other result can be reached today by the court except a decision in favor of the plaintiff. Thank you, Your Honor.
Is counsel finished with their argument?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Mr. Roll, take all the time you need.
Thank you, Judge. First of all, Your Honor, the evidence showed today that this is a personal vendetta by the association and by Ms. Lean against my client, the lovely Lucy Leach. First of all, the association is not collecting from other owners that are delinquent, so that we have a selective enforcement defense.
Good point.
Further, Your Honor, the evidence has shown that the association is not using the assessments properly. They're not maintaining the common elements, and they are also using assessments to pay Ms. Lean a salary of $50,000 a year that she's, of course, used to buy that fancy Cadillac that we heard about earlier.
I don't have a Cadillac.
That's right. But we can ride in mine to play golf later this afternoon. The other thing, Your Honor, that the evidence showed today was that the association is charging late fees that are in excess of that allowed by the Condominium Act. The Condominium Act only allows a late fee of $25 or 5% per installment as set by the Condominium Act. So by charging $50, as was testified by Ms. Lean, they are in violation of the Condominium Act with those late fees. And then finally, Your Honor, we heard the testimony from my client that was corroborated by Ms. Lean that, in fact, payments were sent in. The first payment was actually returned to my client. That's improper under the Condominium Act. They should have been accepted and applied to the past due amounts as per the statute. Secondly, my client sent in a payment, and that payment said on the byline, on the regarding line, that the assessment was paid in full. They accepted that payment, they cashed it, and so we have an argument and a defense of accord and satisfaction. For all those reasons, Your Honor, we feel that we should get a defense verdict this morning and that my client should go hence without debt. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for my ad. Very articulate. Very articulate. All right. Well, gentlemen, I have listened closely to the evidence, testimony of the witnesses. I have all my faculties about me. I'm not under the influence of anything. And I certainly have no bias towards one or the other party or counsel. In assessing this case, the association's sinking value seeks to foreclose a lien, and I grudgingly must admit, Mr. Guy, that you have presented all the basic elements of a lien foreclosure entitlement. Now, that doesn't end the matter, of course, because now we have to examine the affirmative defenses raised by, and I might say raised so excellently by Mr. Roll. Did you say 3 o'clock this afternoon? 3 o'clock. And if you go down, let's take them one at a time. First of all, we have the allegation and certainly solid evidence that the Sinking Value Association is not maintaining those common elements as they're required to do. Unfortunately, there's Florida case law that clearly establishes that failure of an association to maintain is not a defense to delinquency in the payment of assessments. The second affirmative defense that we heard was selective enforcement. And Mr. Roll, you brought out very well, I might say, the fact that apparently your client is the only one now that's actually under litigation. But unfortunately, again, there was testimony that the association had sent letters to other delinquent owners and simply didn't have the funds to litigate against all of them simultaneously. And Florida case law, again, clearly establishes that an association has the right, pursuant to its business judgment rule, to select and prioritize those delinquent assessments that it will collect as long as it takes some action with regard to all others. So I'm going to have to reject that affirmative defense as well. We had the argument that the association was not entitled to the late fees or administrative fees. And I do agree with the defense that the amounts that were charged by Sinking Value exceeded the upper limits established in Florida Statute 718. However, this defense goes only to the amount of the recovery as far as subsequent interest and subsequent late fees. It does not address the delinquent assessments and interest accrued prior to that time. The other affirmative defense that was raised was payment. And I heard testimony that there was a first payment. It was partial. No conditions on the check, and Sinking Value returned it, didn't cash it. Now, once again, under the Condominium Act and Florida case law, when a condominium receives any partial payment, they must accept it. And that's simply because it will be applied in accordance with 718. Now, again, that's not a complete defense to delinquent assessments. That simply addresses interest that may have accrued on that partial payment amount had it been properly accepted at the right time. The second payment had a condition on the check: assessment paid in full. Under almost any commercial paper law regarding negotiable instruments, which is what checks are, that would have been sufficient to require the recipient, if they cashed it, to treat that as paid in full, even if it was not a full payment. However, the Florida Condominium Act, again, specifically provides that any condition on a check, any conditional limitation on the
the payment or the application of the payment is of no effect. So I must reject that as a defense. We also had the final affirmative defense that the money the board was collecting the assessments for were being used for an invalid, illegal purpose, and that is paying Ms. Lean $50,000 a year. Now, I know she does a lot of work. Pains me to think of her down there scraping that pool. However, even though those payments were not authorized by the governing documents, there is also Florida case law that says misuse by the Board of Assessments is also not a defense to the delinquent payment of assessments. So much as it pains me, Mr. Roll, I'm going to have to rule in favor of the Sinking Value Association, recognizing the amount of their debt minus attorney's fees, and for closing the lien and setting a judgment sale date. Now, gentlemen, this makes the association, of course, prevailing party under both the declaration and 718. Do I hear any motions regarding attorney's fees?
Your Honor, the association moves for an award of attorney's fees at this time.
All right, and Mr. Roll, your position on that?
Your Honor, affidavits were filed previously from opposing counsel, and we have no problem with the number of hours that were indicated in those affidavits, but his hourly rate is absurd. So it's about triple what I charge, so we're gonna contest that hourly rate.
And Mr. Guy, what's the total dollar amount of the attorney fees you're requesting?
The plaintiff is seeking $9,500, Your Honor.
Well, I've had an opportunity to review the timesheets and affidavits that were submitted to me earlier. And frankly, under most circumstances, $9,000 would not be inappropriate considering the length of this trial. However, I just can't bring myself to impose on the lovely Ms. Leach and her honorable, competent counsel that much of a burden, since I've already ruled against them and in the case in chief. So instead of the $9,000 and whatever it was, the court will grant attorney's fees in the amount of $900. Now, do we have any other matters before this court, Mr. Guy? Mr. Roll?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
See you at 3. This court stands adjourned. Well, hello there again. Now, this is obviously a caricature of what happens. However, there is a kernel of truth in some of these things. For example, this is an equity action, as I mentioned before. That means a judge is allowed within limits to apply his sense of fairness to the issues. And we frequently see a judge who, and judges are human, just like board members. Nobody likes to impose a lien on somebody's property or residence and put it up for sale on the courthouse steps. Judges are the same way. They'll do it because they know that's what the law requires, and some of them do it because they don't want to be reversed on appeal. But one way, and I'm not saying this is intentional, but we see it with frequency, that a judge can maybe subconsciously address that equity and bad feeling he or she has, is to reduce the attorney's fees and costs that they will find to be reasonable And that's kind of tossing a little bone to the losing unit owner. So that does happen. Obviously, judges don't regularly drink on the bench or squat flies. But I do remember about 20-some years ago, I had a jury trial. And we could hear the judge. He would disappear behind the bench up there. We could hear him clipping his toenail. You could hear the snap, snap, snap. Now, he was a very good judge. You would, if you needed to make an objection, you would stand up and make an objection, and he would pop right up. And he was listening, and he'd say, "Well, counsel, I believe that's well taken. I'll sustain the objection." And then he'd go right back down and finish his pedicure. So those things do happen. The closing arguments, again, were designed, in this case, since there was no jury, they were designed strictly to convince the judge as fact finder that either all the elements of a lien case claim had been met or all the elements of a successful affirmative defense had been met. So, again, without any further ado, if you feel like it, a round of applause for the Taylor and Carls. Too good for Broadway players. Right here they are. Too good for Broadway. Thank you.
If there's any questions and answers, the panel will take them at this time.
Yeah, let's stick around, guys. Anybody have any? Oh, yeah, front row there. Yes, sir.
This question is for the honorable judge. Had the counsel for defense presented evidence that she sent that payment that was accepted by the condominium with a letter and attached that payment to a letter stating that if you accept this, it's full payment for any assessments against my unit. What difference would that have made under Florida commercial law, if any?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, when you say a conditional payment by check, that's not limited to putting it on the face of the instrument. So if you attach a letter that it also makes the payment conditional on something, conditional on you accepting it as payment in full or whatever, under almost any other circumstance, if you accept that, it's that condition goes with the payment. But again, 718 says whether it doesn't limit the fact that the condition is on the check or in an attached letter, they are of no effect with regard to payments for condominium delinquent assessments. And I was trying to remember when that was added. That was added, I don't know, 7-8 years ago. It's not always been that way, but it's in there now very clearly. Yes, sir.
How do you get to court in the first place? Do you go through the mandatory non-binding arbitration? Do you go through an ombudsman? And do they still use the ombudsman?
Well, and again, if you have a condominium rules enforcement, then you will go through the mandatory non-binding mediation. But if you have a delinquent assessment, you don't go through that system. However, having said that, so what you do is, and the ombudsman is not really involved in individual assessment collections. Frankly, what we've seen the ombudsman most involved in is elections of directors, condominium directors, and they have some teams of monitors who will actually come to the election if you make a case that there's been irregularities or you reasonably fear irregularities. But again, they're not really involved in delinquent assessment collection. So the process to get to court is you have to send the demand letters that you heard testimony about. If they're not paid, then you file a foreclosure complaint in either county or circuit court. And now, having said that, all Florida courts now will order you to mediation before they give you a trial date. So even though it's not mandatory arbitration under the Condo Act, you will end up in mediation if you're collecting a delinquent assessment. And it's only when that mediation fails or an impasse is reached that they'll give you, the judge will give you a trial date, and you end up like this. Yes, sir.
The plaintiff was left with an $8,100 balance on her legal fees. Is that an understanding then that is an out-of-pocket expense that is non-collectible?
Well, and I'll let Paul Hinckley, the AKA Noble Guide, answer that one for you.
Yeah, I mean, there's, and usually these instances, the association is obligated to pay the attorney's fees regardless of whether or not they're awarded. So if they're not awarded, then they end up being uncollectible, and it ends up being the rest of the unit owners that ultimately have to shoulder those fees.
Even in the case of unreasonable fees?
Well, you know, that would be a conversation between your law firm and you. You know, if it's not $9,500, it might be a little bit more than we would normally have, but depending on how contentious the matter is. But, you know.
Yeah, that's not our normal fee, by the way. That was part of the fiction up here. I have one here. Can we have a collection agency collect late assessments? And certainly you can. There's nothing that prohibits that. Once again, the devil is in the details. Essentially, the association would be entering into a contract with the collection agency, and you will need to review those terms very carefully, because you know, collection agencies are, and I'll give you one example. If you use a collection agency, you have to ask yourself, what are they doing that makes it more likely they will collect some of the money? And if you can't come up with a good answer, then maybe they are doing things like calling multiple times, knocking on doors, calling after hours, calling at the job. And there are a whole bunch of these things that can be effective, but they also violate both the Florida and the Federal Fair Debt Collection Practices Acts. And those things are almost like the IRS. The penalties in those things are nasty. So you have to be careful that the agreement, if you want to try a collection agency, you want to know exactly what they're going to pay, what they're going to get, and more importantly, what actions are you going to take? You know, we've sent demand letters. We've threatened to lien their property and sell it. What are you going to do in addition to that to make people voluntarily pay? But you can legally do it. There's absolutely. Oh, wait, I have one right here. Oh, no, no, that's the one I just read. Maybe that flask wasn't empty. Yeah.
How long a period of time from the first lien letter being sent would you expect to go to trial if no payments have been made?
Wow.
Repeat the question.
Oh. How long after the first demand letter is sent on a delinquent assessment would you expect before you actually got to a trial? And I will have to qualify that by saying that Paul, 98% of these matters never get to trial.
Yeah, 99%.
Yeah.
Pretty rare.
Yeah, I mean, most collection cases, if you don't at some point convince the delinquent owner to pay, or there isn't something like a short sale or something that ends the collection, most of these are going to end with a summary final judgment, which is not a trial. It's a hearing in front of a judge with no witnesses. They just use affidavits instead of witnesses, and you end up with the foreclosure sale anyway. But the very, 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 very few that actually get to trial, really, with today's court dockets, and I mean, there are literally thousands of bank foreclosures on dockets. They brought in retired judges, some of them, older than me, that we've never seen before, doing, retired judge work, just to try and get through the volume. But I would say in the old days, the good old days, maybe 14 months. Now, 14 years, I heard that. Now maybe 18 months would be highly lucky. You're probably looking at 2 years. Yes, ma'am.
Should all communication between the association and the lawyer, our lawyer, the association lawyer, be written, or can it be orally done over the phone? Shouldn't we have some kind of written documents always in any communications with the lawyer and the association pertaining to a problem with a unit owner?
Well, and, ideally, you'd have a record of all your communications, but as a practical matter, that would rule out essentially communication by telephone. And, a lot of matters just don't need a written communication. Lots of attorneys and property managers, when they do phone calls that they think might in the future be important or something, they'll put the date, the time, to whom they spoke, and just handwrite out a little, I talked to so-and-so about this and that, and they advised this and that, and just rip it off and throw it in your file or something. But, I wouldn't go so far as to say, because basically you would be saying no telephone conversation, and I don't think you need to go that far. Yeah, and we do that. We pretty much document any telephone conversation. Excuse me?
Billing purposes.
We have a timesheet for that. Yes, ma'am.
With the changes in the legislation this last year, would it have been advisable for the association to go after the defendant's tenant's money? Or the rent?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. The other aspect of this, and the question was, with the recent changes to 718 and also 720, by the way, for HOA, would it have been practical to or beneficial to go after Ms. Leach's rent directly from the tenant? And the answer is most assuredly yes, to do that. Another aspect of that is, many times getting a personal judgment is kind of a waste of time, and that's because Florida is what's called a debtor's haven state. And in this case, the association got a foreclosure judgment so that the unit will be sold on the courthouse steps. If for some reason you couldn't get a foreclosure judgment, you have the option to also get a personal judgment against Ms. Leach as the owner. The problem with most of those is Florida's a debtor's haven state. That's why we had O.J. Simpson as a fellow Floridian for a number of years. Literally, Florida has adopted every exemption, debtor exemption, that the bankruptcy code permits. And if you live in your unit and you have a personal judgment, you cannot execute that judgment against the residence, against the homestead. So in this case, another advantage, even if Sinking Value had not been able to get a lien foreclosure, they could have gotten a personal judgment, and since Ms. Leach didn't live there, they could have executed that money judgment against that property. Now, since it's upside down, that wouldn't work. You'd have to wait a few years for the value to go back up, but you'd have your judgment. Yes, sir.
Is it legal for a president or any other director to receive compensation for labor performed?
Well, I'm sorry. Is it legal for an officer or director to receive money like Ms. Lean or compensation in any other fashion? And certainly, if an officer or director expends their own funds, then compensation in the sense of reimbursement is fine. But if we're talking about money just for performing your duties as a director and officer, I have seen some declarations that allow that. And now I'm trying to remember whether 718 forbids it or whether it says if your only if your documents allow it.
I think that's a
flat prohibition. Yeah. So it's off the table. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Back to the personal judgment that you're saying that if an owner and it's been ruled that they owe the association money,
right?
On another issue, which is not back fees, are you saying that we cannot personally go against them, like their bank account or their car or their firstborn or whatever?
Pretty sure about the firstborn, yeah. Well, there is, yeah, if you get a personal judgment for any reason, because they back over your foot or they violate, whatever it might be, they damage some common elements or whatever, a personal judgment for any reason in Florida, then none of those judgments are self-executing. They all just say Joe Doakes owes Sue Brown $5,000. So now you have to go out and find non-exempt assets that you can execute that against. Now, the whole checklist of exemptions is pretty long. The major ones are homestead, if you reside in it, jointly held property, and Florida is very much a minority state in that regard. In other words, let's say you get a judgment against Joe Doakes, and Joe Doakes holds all of his bank accounts, his automobile, his rental house, his Swiss chalet, jointly with his wife. But you only have a judgment against Joe Doakes in Florida. Of course, a Swiss chalet wouldn't be Florida law. But in Florida, you cannot execute that judgment against jointly held property because you don't have a judgment against both co-owners. So that's one of the exemptions we have that makes us a debtor haven state. You can garnish wages, bank accounts, but it is extraordinarily limited under federal law. If they are earned amounts, earned income, they're off limits. If Joe Doakes owns a business, you can execute, and he holds shares, and he's the only one that holds the shares. You can execute against those shares and take title to the shares and end up with a partial ownership of his business. If he has a business banking account just in his name, not in the corporation name or the LLC name, then you can go against that. But if it's a business corporation bank account and not his personal account and you don't have a judgment against the corporation, you cannot execute against that either. So, yeah, there's just a lot of exemptions. That doesn't mean it's impossible. I mean, Mr. Roll's yacht, if he's the only one that owns it, would be a legitimate target, provided there's no bank lien on it. Yes, sir?
What if that property is in a trust?
Well, and again, that would depend on the nature of the trust, and you have to look at every trust instrument. There are multiple types of trust, and each one has different provisions and is treated differently by the law. So you'd have to get a copy of that trust instrument. Somebody back here hadn't asked one yet. Yes, ma'am.
I'd like to go back to compensation for directors. If a director is compensated and is providing material services to the association, would that person not have to be licensed?
Well, and the question, and correct me if I misstated, the question is if a director or officer is performing services for the association and receives compensation, one, can they receive the compensation, and two, do they have to be licensed? First of all, the prohibition against compensation to a director or officer in a condominium only applies to the services, the compensation for what they do normally as a director and an officer. For example, if your director also has a landscape business and the association hires contracts with him or her, then certainly you can pay the landscape business or them personally as a landscaper for that service, because that's not normally associated with what a director and officer of a condo association would do. That makes sense? Okay. Then secondly, as far as licensing, if you're talking about professional licensing and they do something like the landscaping, yes, they have to be licensed. In that sense, if you're talking about the CAM license, a director can do, directors and officers can do things that normally would require a CAM license without a CAM license, because you can be self-managed. A board can operate its own community. I wouldn't recommend it, but in any event, you can do that, and you don't require a CAM license, because in essence, the board is the association.
There's no distinction between a director assuming those responsibilities voluntarily. There's no distinction if they're getting paid for it. They can still do it without a license. Is that what you're saying?
You mean if they're doing something like the landscaping voluntarily?
No, that's not what I'm saying either. If they're providing managerial services, there's a list of things that if you provide these services, the state requires you to have a CAM license.
Yes, but yes, and the answer is boards can self-manage. Does that make sense? In other words, a director can, what CAMs do are manage association properties, accounts, things like that, for compensation. Boards of directors can do that because that's their business. That's the association business. They can do that on their own without being a CAM because that's their...
Without compensation.
Excuse me?
Without compensation.
without compensation.
If they are compensated, what my question is, if they are compensated,
you have to stop.
Okay.
On that landscaping question, if a board member, to go back to your example, if a board member is also a landscaper or has a landscaping company and creates a situation where they won't be compensated for being on the board, but they'll be compensated for doing the landscaping. Why isn't that a conflict of interest?
Well, and there are some provisions in the Condo Act that kind of address that, and basically they say that such an agreement has to meet certain requirements. For example, you have to have bids to establish that it is a market value price, the board has to, without the landscaper slash director participating, the board has to decide independently that the person and his company are capable of doing the work. The director who has a landscape company, if the board doesn't know about it, he has to disclose before the decision that that's his company or he has an interest in the company. And again, he cannot participate himself in either the decision to enter the arrangement or any review by the board of performance, pay, any of those things. But it's not considered a conflict of interest, simply because that director's not participating in it. And the presumption is that the other directors are going to do their fiduciary duty. Now, if you have evidence that the other directors are somehow in cahoots, relatives or secret shareholders or whatever, kickbacks, then that's a matter that is separate. But assuming none of that, it's not a conflict of interest if it's done properly. Oh, forgot you.
On a probable embezzlement case.
Probable?
Probable. Man. I've been told that the statute of limitations is not when the embezzlement took place. It's up to 4 years after you've discovered it. Is that true?
Question is, in a probable embezzlement case, and I'm looking to see if anyone's starting to sweat out there. Is the stat that the 4 year statute of limitations, does it run from the event or when you discover the embezzlement? And you're going to be talking about two statutes today, one's criminal, one's civil. And I assume you're talking about civil. That's the only one the association deals with. Most statutes of limitations have a reasonable discoverability aspect to them. I frankly never give a 100% opinion until I pull them out and look at them. Fortunately, I don't need to deal with embezzlement too often. Does anybody else know if there's a reasonable discoverability thing?
I've been told it was 4 years after you discovered it.
That would make sense. I mean, a lot of the statutes of limitations, it's attached to discoverability. Yeah. Now, and again, if it's an association claim,
yes.
Was it a developer director?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Then you have the added boost that any claims a condo association has that don't begin until the transition of control from the developer, because obviously the developer is not likely to bring that claim. So
12 years,
very unlikely.
Still there.
Very unlikely to bring that claim. Yes, Mr. President. I'm at your service here.
Well, I have a feeling that they're questioned out.
They're getting hungry. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for having all of us here.
Thank you for an excellent, excellent presentation. I think we all learned something, and hopefully we all had a good time in the process. Just a few little notes here. The election of your offices for Space Coast has been tabulated. The board of directors will remain the same. You have Ron Aldridge, Bill Campbell, Doris Hess, Roger Kesselbach, Gary Rigerstein, Dan Kitchens, and Richard White and Clay Witt. Okay, thank you all for putting in your votes. We greatly appreciate it. Copies of this DVD will be available as soon as Steve gives them to me. If you'd like a copy of them, just send me an email, and I'll be more than happy to direct you around to getting them. They'll be $20 a piece. We have an organizational and a board meeting immediately following this meeting. Our next meeting will be the trade show, which will be held at the Crown Plaza Oceanfront down on 81A in Melbourne. And it should be quite full, we hope. We've gotten quite a good bunch of responses for the vendors. So come on down. That'll be March 19th. That's a Saturday from 9 in the morning till noon. Come on down, meet all the vendors. You never know, we might find something for you to buy. And now we have a drawing. If they would bring the tickets up here, we'll see how many people are real lucky today. Can I pick my name six times?
Everybody's filled one out? Get into the drawing? For a massage and some other little things.
It's too late.
Too late.
Okay. Go dig deep.
Okay, we have William Arnold.
There he is.
Come on up.
I'll be accused of setting it up.
Beverly, I can't pronounce the last name, Bev.
Which Beverly is it?
Beverly, you just won yourself a prize. Gail Word. Is she here?
Gail?
Gail?
There she is.
Keep going. I have a bunch of empty ones.
Dig deep.
Okay. Steve Pirog?
Pirog.
Joey.
Demon?
Joey Demon? Or some facsimile thereof?
Joey?
Gary Kitchens? I don't know. I'm trying very hard not to be rigged. Tom Drummond? Tom? Jackie Grant.
Oh,
Luke? The last one coming is the one-hour massage. Roger Kesselbeck. I'm only kidding. Susie Carter. Now, before everybody just walks out the door, just a note, for the trade show, we could always use some volunteers to sit at a couple of the tables and help the young ladies with the sign-ins and just to make sure we can get everything organized. So if you can, anybody who can help, please get down there a little bit early on Saturday. We'll be greatly appreciated. Thank you, and hope to see you all at the trade show.